Welcome, everyone. Everybody, thank you for coming. Is there anybody this is their first time this morning? Okay. So the usual format on Sundays after we do the meditation, sitting and walking, is there's a Dharma talk. This is a Dharma talk, and usually that's it's a presentation of Buddhist teachings and practice, but not academic. In a way, but more in how to practice, to bring these teachings and these ancient traditional teachings of Buddhism, 2,600-year-old teachings, into our daily life, modern times. And usually there's a little time at the end if anybody has any questions. So this morning, my original intention was to, because of some questions people have had recently, just about communication, you know, communication, talking. And since communication, talking, is the primary way we as human beings relate to each other, we do that through talking, it is very important that we look at speech from the point of view of what we are accomplishing or not accomplishing by it. And I was going to read, and maybe still will, from some trainings, some precepts related to rites, what's called in Buddhism right speech, that's from the Plum Village Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. Such as the eighth training, aware that lack of communication always brings separation and suffering. We are committed to training ourselves in the practice of compassionate listening and loving speech, knowing that true relationship is rooted in inclusiveness and in the concrete practice of harmony of views, thinking, and speech. That we will practice to share our understanding and experiences with those we are in relationship with in order to arrive at collective insight. We're determined to learn to listen deeply without judging or reacting and refrain from uttering words that can create discord or cause the relationship to break. Whenever difficulties arise, we will remain in the relationship and practice looking deeply into ourselves and others to recognize all the causes and conditioning, including our own habit energies, that have brought about the difficulties. We will take responsibility for the ways we may have contributed to the conflict and keep communication open. We will not behave as a victim, but be active in finding ways to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. I mean, would anybody disagree with that? No. So just to add on, this is the ninth. Aware that words can create happiness or suffering, we are committed to learning to speak truthfully, lovingly, constructively. We will only use words that inspire joy, confidence, and hope, as well as promote reconciliation and peace in ourselves and among other people. We will speak and listen in a way that can help ourselves and others to transform suffering and see the way out of difficult situations. We determine not to say untruthful things for the sake of personal interest or to impress people, nor to utter words that may cause division or hatred. We will protect the happiness and harmony of our relationships by refraining from speaking about the faults of other persons in their absence and always ask ourselves whether our perceptions are correct. We will speak only with the intention to understand and help transform the situation. We will not spread rumors nor criticize or condemn things of which we are not sure. Again, would anybody disagree with that? Good. So then there's no need for me to speak about it. Which is actually the conclusion I came to. Because I realized, and again, it's because this has been an interesting week, but one of the interesting things for me, I happen to have some conversations with some of our long-term members who are very, you know, have been exposed to these teachings for many years. And these are dedicated, sincere people who practice sincerely and diligently. And yet they both shared with me experiences that they've had in the past week with people they are close with where they did not practice this even closely. So that's why I was thinking this morning, you know, this is the easy part, reading them, listening to them. And again, there's probably nobody here who would say, no, that's not the aim of communication. We're here to just destroy each other and hurt each other as much as we can. No, I don't think anybody here would say that. So I thought the more interesting thing to look at this morning, which is, why don't we practice this? Right? That's the real issue, isn't it? Not that we don't understand these things, but what hinders us? And you know, some of you know that in our community right now, we have intensives, and this summer we have an intensive, the first part of which is going on now, where we're looking at what are called in Buddhism the five hindrances, which again are, what is it that hinders us from practicing living the way we know is best, the way that we know is true, the way we really want to. And oftentimes we don't spend any time looking at that. And that really is the key piece. All of us here, I am sure, whether you are in the Buddhist tradition or other religious spiritual traditions, we have all been exposed to all kinds of teachings, ideas, and philosophies which point us in the right direction. And we wouldn't be here if there wasn't an aspiration or an interest in moving our life in that direction. But having said that, what is it that hinders us, holds us back from actually living, realizing these teachings that make so much sense to us? So I'd like to open that up this morning. And again, maybe in the future, I will give a Dharma talk, an explanation on these. But again, as I'm reading them, they're also simple, and they're also logical, and they all make such sense that, again, that really is not the problem. So let me present some things, and then I'll take questions afterwards. On the non-hindrance side, I would say one of the biggest things that hold us back from actually practicing these kinds of teachings is that the way we go about it. What do I mean? In other words, when we read these kinds of instructions and we agree with them, we are also undertaking a new path for us. We are changing, right, our the way we speak, the way we think about our words, the way we think about our relationships and our role in the relationships. So there's a lot that is implied in these, and we want to change. But I think one of the biggest problems is we do not understand what we're up against in terms of our habit energies. And before I talk about our habit energies, I really want to talk about the other side. The other side is in the world of intention or aspiration. If this is really how we want to communicate with our loved ones, with our friends, with everyone, then I would say, is that in our minds all the time? Not the actual words of these things, but that intention. In other words, when we wake up in the morning and we do our morning meditation and set our path for the day, are we clear how we want to use our words in this day? As we go through our day, as we go through the interactions of our life, again, with loved ones, with friends, with family, with colleagues, wherever, is that in our minds? Right? That I am only going to use words in this way to promote goodness, to be supportive, to be kind, to promote understanding, right? To be compassionate. I'm not going to say anything that would create harm to anyone. Are we clear that that I want to listen to others? That this vehicle of this mouth and words is not simply a vehicle for me always to impose my views or express my views and ideas and opinions about everything. Right? But there is a profound receptive quality to communication, which is wanting to listen and understand others. Right? Is that in my mind? Right? And that is the primary piece. See, most people, the primary piece is what? Getting our ideas across. Right? As opposed to the idea that communication should primarily involve deep listening. So that when we speak, we are speaking in a way that is relevant to what's really going on. Right? And not just to our ideas and thoughts about it. So, again, if these kinds of teachings and practices about speech, and again, saying that understanding that speech, both the listening and the talking, is the key activity of relationship, of all types of relationship. So it is a practice that goes on all day. I mean, I also tell people that right speech also is also very involved with the hidden aspect. You know, the hidden aspect is the way we talk with ourselves. You know, the internal conversation that goes on from morning till night, that nobody sees or hears but you. What is the quality of that conversation? Because I assure you that the quality of that conversation has a lot to do with the quality of the more obvious, overt conversation. So, if this is something we aspire to, and this is just one example of for many of us who are involved in a path of meditation, mindfulness, transformation, spirituality, religion, whatever you want to call it, and we want, or we're involved in it, not just on a faith-based matter, but on a matter of healing and transformation, of awakening, then we have to ask ourselves, is this front and center in my mind? Is that clear? I mean, whatever we're doing, it's not like, you know, we're just it's front and center because I stay alone all the time just meditating on these things. But it means, since I understand that most of my life is in the world of engagement with human beings and with myself, right? Do I look at these teachings on a consistent basis and every day generate that aspiration and intention, you know, to in this case, communicate from this place, right? And at the same time, to really be clear what I'm not. So I guess the first thing I would say on the positive side is oftentimes we look at the hindrances as what holds us back. You know, the things that get in the way, our stuff. That's usually where our focus is. But we don't realize the power of conscious intention. The power of really deep aspiration. Is that clear? There's an energy. We're talking about a kind of energy that will move us in the direction we want. See, most people in their spiritual practice, it's kind of always a rear guard action. Right, always dealing with my issues, trying to, you know, get unstuck, getting, you know what I'm saying? We're always, fighting that one. See, that's where our energy is going. And that's why a lot of it just goes round and round. Right? Situation to situation, day to day. Right? We're always stepping into it and then getting ourselves out of it. You know what I mean? Kind of cleaning our shoes off and, you know, again, until we step in it again. And then we're doing the same thing. I missed that one. And cleaning our, you know, and we're always, right? But I'm saying, you know, really knowing where you want to go and not stepping in it anymore. So part of that is the power of conscious intention. Please understand, and those who've been coming a while, you hear me say it over and over again. Spiritual life is about living from conscious intention. Right? As opposed to always living from conditioning, which is always past base. At this point, for most of us, our thoughts, our stories, our dramas, our emotional life are all arising because of past conditioning. There's no freedom in that. There's only repetition and unknowing. Okay. So entering a spiritual path means one really begins to understand that there's a whole other way of living, relating, acting, thinking, right? And that through conscious intention and aspiration, one can move one's life, body, speech, and mind, in a new direction. Right? But if I only understand that, 1 hour on Sunday, if I only understand that for 15 or 20 minutes when I'm reading my spiritual book, it will not occur. Is that clear? It has to be something that grabs you and informs your life. Okay. Now, why am I putting the primary emphasis here? Because you got something going over here. You know what that is? We call that habit energy. And that habit energy is very strong. Has anybody noticed that? Has anybody noticed that even though you have all kinds of nice aspirations and spiritual intentions and right, that somehow they usually last anywhere between 3 to 5 minutes before we are swept away by what? Our conditioning. Right? And that's not because of personal failure, moral bankruptcy, that you're just too sick and neurotic. It's none of that. It's just that all of us are dealing with our conditioning. And because that has what has been going on for most of our life from morning till night, it is powerful. Not powerful in any real sense, but powerful just because that's what we're used to hearing. Right? That's what we're used to feeling. And so that seems normal to us. And all this spiritual stuff, it's like it's from another planet, even though we're beginning to understand the language. It still is very foreign to us, especially when things get a little dicey. Has anybody noticed where do things get really dicey? In relationships. Has anybody noticed that? I mean, so that's where it's going to get dicey. Right? And that's where all this stuff is going to go out the window immediately, because our habit energy in relationships and our investment, our ego investment in relationships in this traditional way is very powerful because it has been repeated so often and we so identify with it, that is our default, speaking in modern parlance. That is our default setting. Right? I just got a new computer. It's already set with its default settings, isn't it? If I want to kind of customize it, I have to what? Manually change it. Okay? Each of us, even though we may have entered a spiritual path with the best of intentions, our life is running on our default settings, our conditioning, our habit energy. Unless we understand that and consciously go about changing it, they will always rule us. And when I say rule us, I'm not speaking euphemistically. I mean, they will rule us. Most of us are the servant, the slave of our conditioning, of our thoughts, of our stories. Right? They arise in what? And we salute. And we go where they send us. Right? Yes. So again, learning to understand that, and learning to use our mindfulness, our concentration, our insight, so we really can see it as it arises. See, because we should not be surprised when our conditioning arises, when our habit energies arises, right? Rather, you should be surprised when it doesn't, happily. but again, please understand that you will probably first begin to notice, if you're practicing a meditative path, spiritual path, transformative path, you will probably notice the changes more come on the easy stuff, right? And you may still find that when things get dicey, and where do they get most dicey? In relationships, you may find that it's same old, same old, right? Do not be surprised. Not to be surprised means you will not get ambushed. Ambush means, to be ambushed means what? I didn't see it coming. But if you are spending time getting to know yourself, and meditation is about getting to know yourself. You're getting to know yourself in a complete way. All your habit energy, positive and negative, right? So if you're getting to know yourself and you're beginning to have some insight and mindfulness about your habit energy, you should be no longer ambushed or surprised, but you should expect that these mind states and these patterns of communication will arise, and they will arise in spades in very specific situations. What those situations are may be different for everybody in this room, right? But the commonality is we all have them. Just because of our own conditioning, our own life, different ones have been triggered in various ways because of our childhood and growing up, et cetera, et cetera. So we want to use our mindfulness to know ourselves better, and to, when they arise, rather than being the servant, the slave, rather than being driven by our habit energy, we do what? We give it space. We step back, right? And we hold it in mindfulness, right? Simply being able to say, I am aware there's anger in me. I'm aware there's frustration in me. I'm aware there's hurt in me. I'm aware there's disappointment in me. I'm aware, right? Is acknowledging that something has arisen where? In you. Because if we do not take that incredibly important step, we will think it's all arisen where? In them. Right? Right? They're the cause of my fear, anxiety, whatever it is, anger, frustration, disappointment. It's all arisen out there, right? They're the cause of my suffering. And if I could only what? change them, get rid of them, convince them to see it the way I, you know what I mean? Then everything will be all right. But you will notice, after you have done this for 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, that somehow it doesn't work, does it? And it's not because you haven't tried. It is not because you haven't made yourself and everybody around you miserable trying. Right? It is not because you haven't really made an effort, have you? It is because it doesn't work. Because our emotions, our thoughts are all arising where? In our minds. Nowhere else. And it is only because of our own, and this is really hard for us, it is only because of our own conditioning that what happened in this situation sets us off. Somebody else in the same situation wouldn't be set off by that at all. They may be set off by the thing that happened afterwards, the thing that didn't bother you at all. Right? Is that clear? And that's the truth. So do not think that meditation and mindfulness are gimmicks to kind of create some kind of altered state that we can cling to. Mindfulness and meditation are about understanding our minds. Why do we want to understand our minds, our conditioning, so we can heal and transform it, so we can be happy human beings? We can be loving human beings. We can be compassionate human beings. We can be patient human beings. We can be decent human beings. That's what it's about. Is that clear? So we need to be able, we cannot stop our habit energy from arising. It's our habit energy. It will arise. So those of you who are always struggling with your thoughts, trying to repress, silence, suppress, that doesn't work. The energy of our hindrances, the energies of our conditioning need to be worked with skillfully. Right? That's our practice. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, as you know, uses the wonderful analogy of composting, right? Where you take what appears to be garbage, what appears to be just rotting garbage that stinks, if you let it be, and you take those substances, and if you know how to compost, you work them in a way that they what? That they become soil, they become loam, they become something that is capable of supporting and nurturing of flowers, you know, vegetables and things that nourish us. So we have to understand that we need to work with our habit energies, even the most negative, in this way that promotes skillfulness. It's not about throwing the garbage out. It's not about, you know, covering the garbage up, you know, and putting some pretty thing over it. Many of us use our spiritual path as something to prettify the garbage. We don't want to do that. We call that spiritual bypassing. We want to stop that. There may be many people in here who've been practicing spiritual paths or different things, religious things, for years, and wonder why is the rot still in me? It's because we haven't understood that the spiritual path is just about that. If you're practicing meditation, other kind of spiritual teachings, and you're not directing it at your own garbage, you are bypassing your own path of awakening and transformation. Because the suffering that you experience in your life, and even with your best intentions, you transmit to your loved ones, is in you. It's not in them. And Dharma are just simply the tools, the teachings and the tools that help us in this path of healing and transformation. Is that clear? Um, I wanted to, I found this week in talking to these people, and again, these were people who practice and know about what I've just shared, even though they don't do it. Why don't they do it? Well, on the one hand, they don't do it because it is not up front and center with them. You can't just pay heed to this, you know, once a week, once a day, and think that it's going to make a difference. It has to be, we have to have this intention. You know, that from morning to night, I am clear about how I want to communicate. That I am cultivating deep listening, that I'm cultivating deep sharing, that I'm committed to doing no harm. I'm committed to working with my anger, working with my fear, working with my sadness in a transformative, healing way within myself before I inflict it on another. Everybody here can do that, right? If a heroin addict can stop using, if a cocaine addict can stop using, if an alcoholic can stop using, we can stop using. Okay? But in talking to these people this week, what came to mind was the phrase, pain body. Are people familiar with that phrase? Eckhart Tolle, you know, people are familiar with him. And I remember when I read his book years ago. How many years since that first came out? The Now, what's it called? The Now? What? The Power of Now. What?
The New Earth.
Was that where the pain body? Right. And again, you know, in my prior life I was a therapist, and the phenomena that he called pain body, I really was struck with the intelligence and the insight of that. I thought he was really onto something, because in that expression, for those who if you aren't familiar with the expression of pain body, he really talked about this kind of very powerful negative conditioning that lie within us, some more than others, based on their childhood and situations, some more than others. And some differently than others. But his rather than calling it a mental formation or a hindrance or a negative emotion or all the kinds of ways, when he called it pain body, I thought he was on to something. Because in my own experience of working with people for many, many years, and in listening to them talk about it. And these were people in therapy who were really sincerely working on themselves and making changes, right? And yet they would report, you know, they come in and say, you know, it's just, I did it again. You know, I did it again. And even with the best of my intentions, you know what I'm saying, and all that, it just took me over. And usually it was quite damaging, the emotion and the acting out. What struck me when I read Tolle later, whenever I read it, was the way he talked about it was actually the way the people described it. Because if you remember when he talked about this thing called the pain body in people, he talked about it, their experience of it, as if they've been possessed. And I thought that was really the way people were telling me. It was as if, here I am, I'm sort of this nice, kind human being who wants to have a better relationship, but doesn't know. And all of a sudden, something just takes me over, right? And when, and you know, like when you, you know, those of you who ever grew up watching zombie movies and, you know, possession, you know, it's like, you know, like something else is taking you over, and when you're in it, you can't see out of it, right? And that's what people be reporting to me, you know? I mean, I know I've been working on this, and I know, but it's like when it takes me over, all that good stuff that I've been learning, and, you know, it's like gone. And I'm just back into being a raging maniac, taking no prisoners, a bundle of hurt and anger that just wants to, you know, destroy. And these were, you know, fairly nice, benign, civilized people. So this concept of pain body, which again in Buddhism is I mean, again, it's not as if Tolle discovered anything that none of us know about, but the framework, I think, is very helpful in the sense of understanding that there are these places within us that are like a separate body. And it's a separate body of pain. In pain, we mean, you know, negative emotions. Hurt, anger, fear, sadness, despair, lonely. You know what I mean? It's the body can be made up of different elements, but it's its own body, a body of pain. Right? And it lives within us. And when, you know, and it is often, depending on, you know, how well we're doing in life, it is often in the background, right? You may just kind of feel a little of it now and then, but it's really not very out there, out here, and really not affecting us on an ongoing basis until because of our conditioning, we get in situations that trigger it. And then it's almost immediate, isn't it? It just takes you over, and it just feeds on itself. If it is not stopped, it will just feed on itself. It takes no prisoners, does it? And no matter what the other person is trying to do to kind of get out of it, your pain body will not stop until it exhausts itself. And then usually after that experience, one is what? One is happy? No, one feels what?
Yes.
What? One is frustrated, one feels regret-filled, one is
exhausted.
I mean, and we vow what? Never again. And we mean it, don't we, at the time? But then it happens again. Is that clear? So when I said it to these people this week, I said it so they could understand more deeply that their practice of working on their hindrances has not gotten down into it yet. It's not that they haven't sincerely worked it, but they haven't worked it deeply, right? And if you're a gardener, you know, when you're dealing with plants you don't want in your garden, right? We call those weeds. Some of them you can just pull out easily, can't you? Some of them you need to yank at. And some of them, doesn't matter how much you yank, they don't come out, do they? They're deep. They're strong. We need, if we're going to get rid of them, we got to dig down really deeply. It's not going to be as easy as just plucking out, you know, the little ones. Again, do we have the tools in our tradition to deal with this? Yes, we do. You know, the practices of mindfulness, self-awareness, the practice of knowing these parts of ourselves intimately, befriending them, and then learning to work with them skillfully. So when they appear, where do they appear? In our own minds. They don't appear out there. Right? I mean, if we can say there is something fundamental to any valid spiritual tradition, is it turns our gaze in this direction. As long as our gaze is out there, blaming, complaining, whining, holding others responsible for our mind states, our life situation, we are not practicing a spiritual path. Spiritual path says, whatever is happening in my life, my mind state is the responsibility of who? Me. That's very empowering. Putting the blame out there, putting the cause out there, is very disempowering. Is that clear? But when you understand, oh, well, this is not that difficult, right? Changing everybody else in the world, that's a lot of work. Right? That's a lot of work. And it's frustrating work, because why? Because they don't listen to us. They don't obey us. Because they think we're the cause of their suffering. Right? I mean, so it's a dead ender. There's only one person that is causing us to suffer in this life, and that is our own minds. To acknowledge, to understand that and acknowledge that and live from that, you will find is very liberating. Right? You know, in a spiritual tradition, you hear the words freedom and liberation. Have you ever heard those kind of words? We like those words, right? We freedom, liberation, awakening, enlightenment. We love those words. But what does that mean? It means freedom from our conditioning. It means liberation from this habit energy that causes us to suffer. That's what the Buddha taught. Liberation from suffering. But we have to understand that work is going to go on in our own minds. Do you remember even the life of the Buddha? He was out there for 6 years taking all kinds of teachings, going to all kinds of teachers, doing all kinds of practices, which gave him many, many positive results. But he did not feel liberated. It was only when he put aside everything he had been taught and all his involved with all these different meditative philosophical systems and went within his own mind, looked within his own mind, did the work of liberation within his own mind, that he achieved enlightenment. So again, I mean, I'm not talking as grandiose as all of us sitting down and becoming enlightened like the Buddha overnight, but at the level I'm talking about of coming back to ability to engage in relationship in a healthy way. We must acknowledge our conditioning, our habit energy of thought, of emotional response, of speech, but also, giving a bow to Eckhart Tolle, that many of us have this pain body that dwells within us. And it is the cause. You are not the cause of your acting out. I'm not saying that to make you feel good. I'm saying it's not personal, right? Because if you look at that mass of pain, of anger and hurt and disappointment and loneliness and fear, right, that we may call your pain body, and if I said to you, is that something you'd like to cultivate and, you know, kind of really live with and have it grow and really, you know, just take over everything in your life, you'd say what? No. No. So, please understand, that's why I say, it's not you, but it is something that dwells within you, not because you wanted it, but because you didn't know better. And because we didn't know better in our life, we've done and thought and responded in ways that over time have just increased the power. It might have been little when we were children, but because we have cultivated it unconsciously for many years and allowed it to fester, it still lives within us. So we need to understand that and use the practices of mindfulness, concentration, insight to enter the world of our pain body in this intelligent, skillful way and bring healing and transformation to that part of us. I assure you, if you do, it will change. It will soften, it will open, it will diminish, right? If you do not feed the beast will what? Shrink. If you continue to feed the beast, it will continue to thrive. We unconsciously, in spite of our best intentions, continue to feed these parts of ourselves. Again, it is only a powerful aspiration to be different, as well as entering a spiritual path that gives you the tools and the know-how to do it, that what seemed so powerful, that seems so much, you know, you, this is just the way I am, people say that way. No, it's not the way you are. You were conditioned. You were not born with a pain body. Right? All you wanted was what? Some milk. I just had a new granddaughter born 2 days ago, so I've seen it in action. Yeah, they only. I mean, we are born very simply, right? We want some milk. We want to sleep. We want to be nurtured, right? And change when we're wet. Yeah, that's all. No one is born with a pain body. Is that clear? That pain body is something that developed over time. It is not you. So good. Any? Let's spend some time. I mean, any questions about what's been talked about, and most importantly, how to do it, what to do. Is everybody clear? I mean, everybody clear about what's been presented? Or please don't be shy. Don't feel like you, I don't know, have to. Some people come to a center like this and they feel like they got to show up acting enlightened. You wouldn't be here if you were. This is sort of like a hospital. You know, sick people don't come here. I mean, healthy people don't come here. Only sick people come here. So you don't have to feel, you know, if you're in the hospital, you don't have to be ashamed of being sick. Everybody else is there for the same reason. Yes.
Strong, and my mentor has been helping me, but I'm kind of in a funny place because sometimes the old words, I find that I don't, the aspiration is there, so I don't speak at all. Mm-hmm. And it feels strange, like, because I don't know what to say anymore. I feel like things are changing, but because I think if I say something, or I just, it's going to kind of fuel, especially with people that, you know, can be very opinionated. Mm-hmm. So it's best, I'm finding just not to say anything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just listen, but it's kind of, relationships.
So I'm going to repeat the question for the, what was shared is that she's been practicing and really paying attention to her speech and wanting to be different and learning not to say anything. but that feels one a little awkward because a lot of times there is still that energy that, you know, want to get that word in, don't we? Want to defend ourselves or want to point out the other's fault or, yeah, there is that energy. Often, you know, wanting to hurt because they've hurt us or something, or so that energy is there, and MT is saying, well, she's learned to be just hold it in, but it feels a little weird, but also not quite sure if that's really the most skillful thing to do. First of all, I think learning to keep your mouth closed is wonderful. You know, that right there is a good beginning, okay? And that will feel strange for many of us because we're used to what? What?
Just running off
at the mouth. You know, we like to run off with the mouth. Yeah. And again, like I said, this is a path of conscious awareness. We need to kind of, not just like it's a moral truth that's been imposed on us, but like, because in Buddhism, it's about understanding. We understand because we look and we see the damage that opening our mouth in situations where we are not at ease, where we are angry, where our heart is riled up, you know, there is no capacity for clarity of speech. There's no compassion. I mean, there's no capacity for any kind of intelligence or wisdom or anything, you know, positive when the mind is, you know, infused with negative energy. So just learning to keep that closed, even if it feels weird and you feel the energy wanting to open it, I would say is a good start. I mean, that's very good. I mean, that minimizes the harm. And again, there's nothing wrong with saying to the people who are used to you responding, letting them know that you're no longer going to be doing that. Don't take it the wrong way, but that you have decided that you know, that your speech patterns in the past in these kinds of conflictual situations have either made things worse but never have made things better, and that you're really going to refrain from that from now on. So, I mean, you can let the other person know that, you know. I am refraining because I really know that saying anything at this point may not be helpful and it may be harmful. Okay? So there's nothing, that's good. That's intelligent, isn't it? Yeah. And even though it feels a little weird over time. Now again, the obvious next step, of course, is that you use that energy that you would have used to, you know, feed the beast, to look into the beast. What, you know, to what's going on inside me now? You know, where this energy that wants to say something, it's the energy of what? What is that energy?
Habit
energy of what? Anger.
Sometimes. Need to control.
Need to control. What?
So for me, it was almost like the way it was, had to be accepted. You had to say something to be a part of.
Yeah. So again, when you
engage, that was the way of engage.
So to kind of feel a part of things, part of the relationship, you had to say something back. And you might want to look at that and go, is that really healthy? Is that really what relationship is about? Is that really how to stay connected? No. So you want to, again, look at the energy that's behind what you're doing. You know, that's the looking in. Because again, like coming back to this precept here, we know that the purpose of speech is what? Speak truthfully, lovingly, constructively. We will only use words that inspire joy, confidence, and hope, as well as promote reconciliation and peace in ourselves and among other people. We will speak and listen in ways that help ourselves and others to transform suffering and see the way out of difficult situations. Oh, that's what speech is about. I thought it was telling people what we thought of them. Come on, I thought it was just an open door to express anything that's arising. You know? Oh, see, so it's like we're learning in a spiritual path. Oh, this is what speech is really about. Oh, and it should wake us up a little bit and challenge us. And I mean, I'm glad you're feeling uncomfortable. That's good, because it shows you're changing. You know, and change is not always, there's not always easy. It's not always lovely. Change sometimes is difficult. It feels weird. Right? Not getting, a lot of people in arguments, they always got to get the last word. Right? It's like, what are you up to? What is getting the last word get you? But now forces the other person to get the last word. It'll go on for days. You've already said it. I mean, how many times do you have to, it's like, I gotta restate my case one more time. Somehow they just don't get it, and if I just state it one more time, a little stronger, then, right? Why do we laugh? Because we have a moment of clarity and insight, and we go, yeah, that's ridiculous. And yet, when our habit energy is activated, when our pain body is going, it seems the right course, right? That's what lets you know why I thought Tolle's thing is so right. It's like we're possessed, and this part of us that can sit here with objectivity and intelligence, gone, right? So good. Good. And you can say to the person, when I have something insightful or intelligent or helpful on this matter, I will talk to you. Well, that'll really shock them. Who have you been hanging out with? Good. Any other question? Yes.
Could Eckhart Tolle coin his pain body related to the music self?
Yeah, it's all tied up, right? If we look at, what is the origin at the deepest level of this pain body? It is this ego, this self that has so identifies. Not only with everything that happens, but that everything that happens is always identified as somehow related to me. And so these things that happen to us in childhood and adolescence and our 20s, we have so grabbed onto, and the self has made a part of its story, and the self always wants the story to be what? About itself in a positive way. Right? So all the negative stuff that it also is identified with, it's always trying to get away from. So it's just, right, I mean, that's the underlying mechanism. And in Buddhism, we look that deeply to see that underneath all this is a self that what? That wants things to be different. Right? I don't want you to be the way you are. I don't want you to say what you're saying. It's all ego. Right? Yeah, if you want to cut through it, cut through the self, and you'll see the root of it all. But again, the reason we have to do this kind of work and thought about the pain body, because as I said, when it arises, it's like possession. And all your understanding, it's just the ego and self that Jeff is sitting here with great understanding, gone at those moments. So that's why it's kind of like, that's why I think, again, Thich Nhat Hanh's formulation is so meaningful for us today when he talks about, rather than talking about enlightenment, he talks about a path of healing and transformation, right? In other words, there are parts of us that need to be healed before they can be transformed, right? And that traditional approach to a spiritual path, especially in Buddhism, that puts all the emphasis on traditional forms of meditation and wisdom without acknowledging the wounding, I think, again, leads to spiritual bypassing. We just kind of, we're just going around this stuff. And I think it's important that we understand that this is a path that goes, you know, that incorporates everything and heals, heals what needs to be healed and transform what needs to be transformed so we can lead an awakened life. But also there's a time crunch here. So we will stop now. Thank you.